Welcome back to the Plumbline podcast. Over this summer, we've decided that it would be a good idea to slow down a bit and bring you something a bit more meditative, and we're calling it The Doctrines That Made Me. Each week, we'll ask a trusted friend, and in some cases, former guest, to tell us about a Christian teaching that has had a profound impact on their life and faith. We hope that instead of rolling your eyes at the word doctrine, you'll be inspired by what you hear, and that these teachings will become the doctrines that make you too.
Jo has been my friend for probably about 15 years, and we first met at university a long time ago. We often could be found in Bar One over sharing some chips and a burger on any given weekday while we were both not that busy doing university work. Jo and I quickly became really good friends, and we started to read the Bible together, and we ended up going to church together and have been walking the good walk together for the whole rest of the time. Jo is somebody who I often phone up or message with some thoughts or questions about the Christian life, and she was one of the first people that spoke to about whether we should start the plumb line. And in Jo, we knew that we would have at least one listener. So Jo is mum to two and wife to Tim, and is currently on maternity leave, but otherwise works for a Christian organisation as an operation manager. She lives in Manchester and is pretty much Mancunian through and through. So, Jo, why don't you say hello to everyone and tell us what doctrine you've got for us today.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for that introduction, Kat. That was lovely. So the doctrine that I've chosen for today is the doctrine of sin, which might sound a little bit sort of, I don't know, somber at first sight hearing, but yeah, I've gone with the doctrine of sin because when Kat reached out, they said, pick a doctrine that's had an impact on you. And as I thought about it, this one really does on a day-to-day basis. So that's why I've gone for this. So hopefully as I talk, that'll sort of make sense of why I've gone for this one. Do you just want me to kick straight off with?
Yeah.
Okay, so first of all then, what is sin? And where did it come from, and what does it mean? So we're going to just sort of dive straight in with that. As far as I understand it, at its sort of basic level, sin is rebellion against God. And so if you were to look in Genesis 3, where we sort of first see sin enter the world, you get a really helpful sort of understanding of what sin is and, sort of how it plays out. So right at the start of the Bible story in Genesis 3, sin enters into humanity. And we see that when the serpent tempts Adam and Eve to disobey God and eat this fruit. And he does that by causing them to question God's goodness and truthfulness, and by offering them a chance to be the God of their own lives. So that's where this idea of sort of rebellion against God comes into play. You see, the serpent tells them that if they eat this fruit, that you'll not surely die, which is what God has said. For God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you'll be like God. So the serpent's offering them this sort of chance to be like God, of knowing good and evil, he says. And this all sounds a little bit strange, because just in chapters 1 and 2, we're told that they were made in God's image, that people are made in God's image. They're already like God. So there's something a bit sort of strange going on here. But what the serpent was offering them, or trying to lure them in with, was to be like God in a way that they weren't created to be. So as God's creation, we're made to reflect God, to bear his resemblance. And instead, what the serpent was offering them was for them to rival God and to be like God in a way that they weren't meant to be. So whatever this knowledge of good and evil was or is, that's something that belongs only to God. Otherwise it would have been fine for Adam and Eve to have it. And so this sin that we see in Genesis 3 is just that. It's rebellion against God. It's rejecting God's good reign and rule and seizing or grasping at being God of our own lives, I guess. And so we see that this sin entered the world, and straight away we start to see the consequences of that. So we see the shame that Adam and Eve felt. We see the blame that goes on between them. Very soon after, we see the consequences and curses that God gives following what we call the fall. So yeah, I guess that's sin, and that's and there's consequences to that. And to fully understand the consequences, we need to really understand Genesis chapters 1 and 2 as well, to know that as humanity, we are creatures who are created by God to bear his image. So the beginning point for humanity wasn't broken image bearers, but as God's very good image bearing creation. And so the understanding of what it means to be human doesn't start at Genesis 3, it starts in chapter 1. And so to understand what's happened and what has broken when sin entered the world, you have to first see humanity in light of chapter 1. And we see all creation working and living in perfect unity with its creator. And so it's this relationship that is lost and broken by sin. And so once we see that in chapters 1 and 2, we understand that what sin does, what this rebellion does, is breaks that perfect relationship. And as I've already said, the consequences are seen straight away, and things start to unravel. Things start to go wrong almost immediately. And the biggest of that is that our relationship with our loving creator God is now damaged. And so that's sort of what sin is, how it came to be. And then the Bible goes on to teach us and show us that sin is now in all of us. It's a part of humanity. So every human, except for Jesus, we follow the line of Adam, and we are therefore sinful by nature. So we've all got this inherited sin, and we've all got our actual sin in our own lives. So sadly, since then, this is a part of our reality that we have to live with and sort of experience on a day-to-day basis. And we are probably all aware of our personal sin, and we see that day to day, but there's also like the corporate and systemic sin that we see in the world. You see people starving, you see racism happening, you see all sorts of injustice and terrible things going on in the world, and that is similarly just a consequence of sin, of sinful individuals ruling the world. And as well as that, we also see that creation has been subjected to what it says in Romans is like a groaning. So as a result of sin, one of the things that has happened is that the earth is cursed, and the world is suffering as well. So it's the earth as well that's broken, as well as people. And so we do see natural disasters, and the world isn't working as it's supposed to, and all of this is a consequence of sin. So basically sin has caused this unraveling of all that was good about Eden. Sin has now sort of caused that to unravel and break. And this, that's the world that we find ourselves in now.
So do you remember when it was that you first sort of heard this doctrine of sin, and when it really kind of came home to you? And what do you remember about how that made you feel about yourself and the way you perhaps had looked at the world till that point?
Yeah, so I think, so I was brought up in a Christian home and always went along to church. But I don't think I fully understood the doctrine of sin till I got to university. So prior to that, I think I more understood it as, you know, I do things wrong from time to time and I'm trying to be a good person and God forgives me when I make mistakes and things like that. However, it was at probably university when I got this sort of almost like bigger picture understanding, because obviously things that you do wrong actions are a consequence of sin and they are tied up with it, but it's bigger than that, isn't it? And so I don't think I really grasped that until university. And yeah, I think like it's mind blowing. So at first hearing of that, my response was just, oh, like, I'm terrible. This is just horrendous. Like, I had no idea just how bad I was. Like, I thought I was all right. But once I sort of grasped this doctrine more deeply, I think my first response was, oh my goodness, like, I am awful. And that's like a bit of a rock bottom place to be. But then to come out of that, well, it's just amazing. And it's all, yeah. Yeah, just that really.
I love that line about all of what was good about Eden was unraveled by the events of Eden. And I think it's so common, isn't it? Like we're so familiar with it in some ways that you just, yeah, every now and again, a line like that can just hit you, I think, and just make you go, yeah, like everything good about Eden was destroyed by what Adam and Eve did in Eden. And I love that line as well about the reason why it was sinful for them to have that knowledge was because it belonged to God alone. Mm. And I think that just really struck me, that I'm not sure I've ever really kind of heard it framed in that way. Like it was God's knowledge and his alone. And yeah, sounds really obvious, doesn't it? But it's just quite a powerful way to put it, I think.
Yeah, that God is God and we're not. And yeah, there are obviously a certain attributes that we mirror God in, but there are also others that aren't ours for the taking.
I think the better you understand it as well, the more appreciation you have of who Jesus is and who he needed to be and why it could only have been him who could atone for the sin of the whole world. Absolutely. And as you say, not just our personal sin and the things that we do, but even if you're just sitting still doing nothing, you can look outside and you can just see the impact of sin in, I don't know, plants dying, animals run over, pollution that is making people ill. You know, that there's almost nothing that we can do in this life that isn't spoiled in some way or spoiling. And so, yeah, I mean, just a reminder that, you know, the law on its own could never do what really needed to be done, and why we need this perfect person. And so I think for me, with appreciation of the doctrine of sin, is although it, you know, when you take it outside of yourself, you do have a deeper appreciation for how it's so much bigger than just me getting everything right in life, which anyway we know we can't do, but that that really there was only one person who would ever be able to write it, and thank goodness that there has been.
Yeah, so I was when I was sort of thinking through what to say today, I was thinking like, why is, like, in what way has this doctrine impacted me? And I came up with sort of three main ways in which it has, and I think you've just touched on two of them. The first one being that it compels me to worship God, because when we see ourselves as we truly are, then it makes God look all the more beautiful. And we see elements of God's character in the way that he responds to Adam and Eve. So we see him searching for them in the first instance, looking for them in the garden, in the same way that he, you know, looks for the lost in the world now. And you see him clothing them and covering their shame, and you see that he's a just God. You know that there are consequences, he can't leave that sin unpunished. And as we see these glimpses of God's character, they all sort of turn my heart back to him. But perhaps the biggest is that as I think about my own life and the ways in which I grasp at being God of my own life, it just makes me think of the bit in Philippians where it talks about Jesus being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing. You know, and like, why did he do that? Well, he did that to save me from my grasping. And like, that's just mind blowing, isn't it? And if that doesn't stir your heart to worship, then what will, really? So that was the first one, which you've touched on, Kat. And the second one is, it helps you to make sense of the world. Like, you look around and you see this brokenness everywhere, where, like you said, in plants dying or whatever it might be. You know, or when relationships break down, or when people are ill, or people die, or whatever it is, like, you see it every day all around you. And it really helps me to know that this isn't the way God intended it. I'm not worshipping a God who made it this way and wants it this way. I'm worshipping a God who is heartbroken by what he sees and will come and sort it out one day, you know? So having that sort of point of reference is massively helpful on a day-to-day basis. And I find it so helpful talking to my children within that way as well, to help them to understand why bad things happen. I just think that's hugely helpful. And then the third way in which it impacts me is that it makes me long for Christ to return. And so you look around at the brokenness, both in my own heart and in the world around, and you just long for that day when the serpent will be crushed, and when we get to that new Eden that we read about in Revelation 21. And so that's the other thing it makes me do, is just long and pray for Christ to return.
That was so great, Joe. That was just brilliant. And I think a part of me always thinks the desire to understand sin more, I think, is partly a sign of a maturing and a sanctification. I think it's quite an immature faith that says, I don't want to talk about that, and I don't want to hear about that, and I almost don't want to live up to that. But, you know, I think a maturing faith and a faith that's being sanctified is asking the question, like, where is sin in my life? And I think that, you know, when you kind of said that thing about, like, I didn't really know. I used to just think that I was, like, all right. You know, I think it's just so normal, isn't it? So normal to feel like that when we know the wickedness that's in the world, and when we're not perpetrating that. But it just made me think of that Spurgeon quote where he talks about, like, a little salt can flavour. I can't remember exactly what it is. Something like a little salt could flavour the whole ocean or something. And that's exactly what sin does to us. It's in our every atom, our whole nature, and it's so abundantly there. And to say that you can't see it is to basically be deceived. So love it. Love talking about sin. My top three topics.
Too miserable.
I was going to say that quote is, as the salt flavors every drop in the Atlantic, so does sin affect every atom of our nature. It is so sadly there, so abundantly there, that if you cannot detect it, you are deceived.
Yeah, that's the one. Thank you. Good Googling.
You're welcome.
But yeah. So we've been finishing off this little series by doing a kind of different plum crumble. So we want to know, what is your plum crumble you're looking forward to? What are you looking forward to doing, reading, watching, writing, smelling, wearing, tasting this summer?
I'm looking forward to continuing to watch Love Island.
Ah, yes. Tell me which couple you're currently hoping will win.
Oh, good question. I actually think Millie and Liam are quite cute.
Yeah, they've grown on me, I have to say. I'm with you on that. Yeah.
So I just caught up on last night's episode. So this will obviously be out of date when this airs. But Brad got dumped today, leaving Lucinda behind. Sorry if it's a spoiler. And I was absolutely so shocked. Like, I thought he was all about the game and a bit of a player, and he was like, no, she's the one for me. And it absolutely floored me. So, yeah.
Well, it just goes to show you can't judge a Love Island contestant by their looks.
No, you can't.
Yeah, he's come under a bit of flack, hasn't he, for just being a bit boring. And
yeah, this is probably unkind, but one of my friends described him as a beautiful idiot. But he's very beautiful.
So it's sort of all right.
I don't know, but I agreed with the first half of the statement that he was beautiful.
There's a certain irony that this episode has been about sin and is finishing in Love Island, isn't there?
I know, that's why I was slightly reticent to plum crumble it.
I could see it. I knew why there was such a pause. It was because you couldn't see past anything in your head apart from Love Island.
Yeah, I was just like, what am I looking forward to watching? I only have time to watch one thing a day, and that's Love Island.
And that's my priority.
Yeah.
Love it.
Although, like, this isn't really a particular book that I'm looking forward to reading, but I've recently discovered that our library has an app called Borrow Box. I don't know if all the libraries in the country have this, but you can borrow audiobooks. And I recently got rid of my Audible subscription, which I was slightly sad about, and now I can still get audiobooks from the library. So there you go. That can be a better plum crumble for anyone who's not interested in Love Island.
You
go
are
and,
making...
Go and download Borrow Box.
You're like making Kat's whole life here.
You have thoroughly recovered the Love Island situation, which I just don't really have words about, to be honest. Mainly because I've never watched it. I think different regions use different library apps.
Okay.
The Sheffield one is called Libby.
Okay.
For anyone who's interested, who's more local.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I was just so like pleased to be able to get audiobooks from the library.
Yeah.
So,
it's great.
Currently working my way through Jessie Burton, sort of on The Miniaturist, done The Confession.
Oh yeah, that's really good. I love The Miniaturist.
Yeah, halfway through, so.
Jo, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about the doctrine of sin and explaining it to us so well. And we'll be praying for you with your Love Island addiction.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much for coming on and sharing that with our listeners. We really hope that you've enjoyed hearing about the doctrine of sin today, maybe learn something new about our great God. And so if you have, do let us know in the comments on Instagram, Facebook or Twitter. We'd love to hear how you're finding this series. And why not share the episode with a friend? We'll be here with another doctrine for you next week. In the meantime, goodbye.
Bye.